Happy Samhain, witches. This is Leandra, and I wanted to pop on real quick to give you a quick disclaimer about this episode. Yes, we are talking about blood, bone, bodily fluids, necromancy. This is a touch on the darker side of witchcraft. So if that is something that makes you squeamish, please skip this episode, and you can catch us in a couple of weeks. Blessed be.
This time on the Magic Kitchen podcast, we're talking blood and bone, dark magic.
I'm Leandra Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
Magic Kitchen Podcast is funded and supported by thewitchwoodteahouse.com, offering a variety of hand-blended loose leaf teas as well as loose herbs for all of your ritual, spell work, wellness, and everyday enjoyment needs. If you would like to support this podcast while sipping a great cup of tea, head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com and find the magic that's in store for you.
All right. So we are in full force fall. There's so much going on.
And I'm in the U.S., which is wild and exciting.
Yay! I'm so excited. We are hanging out. We are having fun.
Yeah.
And you are doing things at the Serpent's Key, which has been a huge spotlight, I guess, in social media and even the news now because of what happened with the police chief. And ironically, that's where I sell my teas. You're going to be doing events there.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to support.
So local for Beck us.
And yes.
Yeah. It's really fascinating to see. Like, I think if this happened even 5 years ago, like pre-COVID, I don't think the community would have rallied to defend a fortune teller. Quote unquote.
Right. Quote unquote.
But it's interesting because that's the same law that they use to persecute witchcraft in Greece.
Yes.
Now, Greece has like more problems because also there's no separation of church and state. And the Greek Orthodox Church follows church law, which means, you know, we all know the parable, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. So witchcraft is illegal in many ways here. But the one that they've used to arrest people is fortune telling, anti-fortune telling laws. And nobody comes to their rescue. These people just go to jail or they pay fines they can't afford and get kicked out of their homes or both. So it's really heartwarming from that angle as well for me to see the support that's come around Beck for this. And like, they are such an amazing person. They're so community oriented. They're so driven.
Yes.
They're so kind. Like, if you can support the Serpent's Key in Hanover, Pennsylvania, any way you can.
Well, and that's the thing that drives me nuts. It's like, she has done all these initiatives to clean up Hanover, to bring in people to downtown, to bring revenue to the local area. And this is how they treat her.
It
is just such a hypocritical and nasty way to run a city. Like, this is really what you want expressed to the world of how, you know, especially when you are so close to other areas in Pennsylvania that are high tourism. You know, you have Gettysburg and all these places that are great to visit. So why not include Hanover? It's a nice little city. It's not, it's tiny, but it's, you know, it's cute. It's quaint. It's that hometown feel. So why not encourage visitors of all walks of life? Like, do they, you know, it's, you're only going to allow really one type of business or one type of business model, one type of person into your downtown, and then harass them, the others that don't match your cookie cutter idea of what a business owner or a business should do and how they should function? It pisses me off beyond belief.
Yeah. So stay tuned. We will keep every listener, no matter where you live in the world, updated on how you can maybe get involved, sign petitions, whatever, because they're trying now Beck is trying to remove the law, like working. I mean, this just happened. Yeah. So as you're hearing this,
it's only a couple weeks in the works.
Yeah, but yeah. It's growing and they're already raising money. If you go to the Serpent's Key website, they're already raising money to remove this law. Like it's going to be
good.
It's going to be a big initiative. And I'm so touched that the community is showing up and supporting in this way.
And that's how we break through these things. We break through them by coming together, putting our money where our mouth is, putting our time where it matters, and standing up to these old ways of thinking, these old suppressive, oppressive ways of thinking and doing. And it's important to stand up and fight for who you are and to protect those who are not doing harm. You know, nobody's doing any harm in this shop.
Yeah.
I'm just so frustrated with it.
And I will be presenting two separate workshops at the Serpent's Key this autumn. So the first is November 12th. I'll be presenting on Artemis Hecate, who is a dyad deity, meaning like two deities, combined deity, that was worshipped in at my home temple here that I live on the temple lands for of Artemis. So I'll be presenting a bit on that. If you work with either Artemis or Hecate, it's going to be of interest to you. And then I will also, December 3rd, be presenting on the modern history of witchcraft. So looking from 1880 to present, how have we gotten where we are? And it's a presentation of the research I did for my master's degree on witchcraft. So it'll be a really good time. I'm super excited to hopefully meet some of y'all in person.
Yes.
It's never guaranteed when I get to come to the States. And that's where...
No.
You know, 90% of our listeners are. So it's really exciting to hopefully meet you.
It's a great way to not only support the podcast, but also the Serpent's Key. Exactly. And I will also have my books available in her shop, and I still have my teas available in her shop. So if you are looking to support the podcast,
it all goes in tandem.
We all work together. And that's the beautiful part of this, part of how community should work, is we're all supporting each other. We're using our resources, our knowledge, our expertise to support each other. And that's what that's the golden apple, I think, of all of this.
Yeah. You may have noticed that here at the Magic Kitchen Podcast, we don't have sponsored ads. That's because this is a fully listener-supported show. We do what we do for you, dear listener, and when you join my magical living community on Patreon, you're supporting all the time and energy that goes into setting up podcast interviews, writing articles and rituals, my paranormal mystery novel, and all that I do. And in exchange, you're getting over 10 exclusive journal prompts, rituals, witch tip videos, meditations, and more each month. If you love this podcast, consider joining my magical space. I can't wait to meet you and be an even bigger part of your magical journey. Go to patreon.com/Elise Wells or follow the link in the show notes. Dark magic, quote unquote, is more than meets the eye. It's something that scares a lot of people off. A lot of people think you need to be a very advanced practitioner to even talk about these subjects, but we're going to debunk and explore a little bit of those topics with you, blood and bone particularly, which is very appropriate since this is coming out right before Samhain. And this is the third of our episodes in October that discuss the shadow work of the collective consciousness. We started looking at the witch wound. We continued talking about witch wars and this battle for magical supremacy. And now we are concluding with the dark side of witchcraft, talking about these elements of magic that we often feel compelled to keep secret. And if you haven't listened to the other two, you can listen to this one now, of course, but you might like the other two as well. So you might want to go back and take a look at those.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying this series because we're touching on things that I think get a lot of controversy or heat, but they're necessary parts of the craft, things that we have to either look at to resolve shadows or look at as an element of power within our craft. And I think that's where a lot of people get, maybe that's where the fear comes from. And I know I only go that direction because I think that's where stepping into my own power really kind of, I started tripping myself up, like, what if I was powerful? Oh, what does that mean? Like, who am I going to hurt? Am I going to hurt myself? Am I going to lose people? Am I, you know, what does that look like to be, to actually step into my power and own my ability? And I was just talking to one of my Dark Mirror clients who she knows, she comes from a long line of very powerful women. And she knows she has this power inside of her, but it terrifies her. And how many of us out there, I step into that and include myself, step in that ring, that, you know, how many of us out there are just terrified of our own power because we've been told that we should be terrified of it. We're told that we're wrong to have this bone deep energy that we can utilize to benefit our life. We're taught that it shouldn't be that way, that we shouldn't have this power. We shouldn't own it. We shouldn't exercise it. And I think that's why these episodes are so important, because now we're going to talk about that blood and bone and why it's so important to the craft and why it is so effective and such a great thing to use ethically, of course, but why it's such a great element to have and to own within your craft.
Mm-hmm. And it reminds us to deconstruct the upbringings many of us share in Christianity or Islam or Judaism that taught us that magic has to come from without. And of course, they didn't use the word magic, but that power, that healing, that restitution, all of that, put it in someone else's hands. If you need your house blessed, invite the priest over. You can't do that yourself. If you need your children blessed, bring them to the church because they're the only ones who know how to do it. We're always here to cheer you on and tell you that that's not true, that you have the power deep within you, in your blood, in your bones. And we're going to show you and tell you today how you can start to harness that.
Absolutely. Recently, we had a big online event in the community that delved into this idea of utilizing your own power and stepping into your own power and blessing things in your life to help magnify or support that power that you have within. And one of those activities that I teach in that course, in the Rebel Mystic Method, is blessing your water every morning. And I teach my students how to create their own sigil that they use. It's a personal sigil that they use for only that purpose, to empower themselves each and every morning, to remind them of their purpose, of their goals, and to take their water bottle, to take their glass of water, to start their day with cool, clean water. And they inscribe this water with their personal sigil. And then every time they drink, they're infusing themselves throughout the day or the morning, however long it takes them to drink that water, with that power. And one of my students asked me, well, where do I find the power to do that? How do I do that? I don't have the authority to do that. It was basically where the conversation was going. I'm like, bull, you do have the authority. You absolutely have the authority. And after she really dug into it and started realizing, yes, I'm connecting with my spirit team. I'm connecting with my higher purpose. I'm connecting with my plan, my manifestation method. I'm connecting with my essence. Yes, I have the authority. And she messaged me a couple of days ago saying, oh my God, like, this is amazing. I love my water now. I can't wait to pour myself that glass of water and inscribe it. And that's what it's about, is engaging in these practices and feeling them to our bone, in our blood, and really getting aligned with that idea that I have this power. You know, I feel like He-Man right now. I have the sword above my head. I have the power. You can tell I'm an 80s child, right? Wow. This is an amazing topic. The witch wound, witch wars, they are definitely things we should be focused on. They should be on our radar as elements of our collective shadow and ourselves that we need to heal and remedy. This area of our community that keeps us
divided and in competition is so filled with jealousy and insecurity, anxiety, low self-esteem. I don't think as witches we can tolerate it much longer. After all, why are we witches if we're not here to stand in our own power? And if we are continually engaged in these kinds of energetic exchanges, then what are we doing? We're giving away our power. So if you are tired of this, if you're tired of feeling like you have to be better than someone else or like you have to keep up with the Joneses, it's time for a change. And I have a solution for you. The Rebel Mystic Method is not only a comprehensive workbook. It is also a course that I offer that will walk you through the entire workbook that will lead you to manifesting the enchanted, balanced, and productive life you deserve. If you want to learn more, check the links in the show notes, or you can visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com. So let's get back to the episode. So let's talk a little bit about blood magic and how blood is the essence of life and why that is so important to this blood and bone practice. So when we think of blood, well, most of us might get icked out. but blood is, it's the water in our veins. It's the circulation of our body. It moves nutrients. It moves heat. It's so essential to our existence, right? We can't deny that. We can't live without our blood. And using blood in magic is one of those essential practices when you, especially if you're using your own blood and you're trying to connect with things that are deeply rooted for you, within you, manifesting deeply rooted situations or opportunities for you. Menstrual blood is a really good example where you don't have to do, it's still bloodletting, but it's not literally cutting into your skin. And, you know, you can use this method in your garden to help your plants grow. You can use it in spell work to link something to you or to draw something to you. There's so many ways to use blood. I, of course, always with any kind of bodily fluid, always be safe. You know, don't use other people's blood. If you're going to use blood magic, that's my recommendation. It's always, if you're going to do it, it's for you and you use your own blood. What are your thoughts on that?
I use blood magic very limited. Mm-hmm. It's very limited in my practice. I only have used it to consecrate items as per my training in my coven and as part of my initiation. That's it. That's the only time I've used it. Now, I've come across spells that are like, you should use blood. You should do this with blood.
Yeah.
Use blood for this. And I use hair. I just use hair instead. Yeah, hair the works. Only other time I've used it, still in the process of I'm hesitating here because it's not, I'd never want to share anything too detailed about my coven work. Because it's just, that's just the way we do it, right? We always keep these coven things a bit secret initiation-wise. I will clarify, we don't do bloodletting as part of coven initiation. But in the process of being initiated, you go through a year and a day of training, and that's where you learn how to use blood magic. And we also learn about other stuff that we don't talk about. And that's why we don't talk about initiation, is because blood and urine and, you know, these things that hair. Feel gross and like personal, and we're like, oh, collect your fingernails. You know, it's creepy. Yeah. It's weird. And that's why you kind of wait for people to be in the formal training process, because it's like, you've already committed this far. It's not going to freak you out at this point. It's not secret in explicit terms. It's just, we don't go shouting it from the rooftops because it's a bit awkward.
Our culture has demonized it because of you know, horror movies or whatever.
And it takes explaining.
Out there.
It takes explaining. Yeah, it does. Because it's not like when we say we're using blood, we're not, it's not the craft where we like, you know, they gash across their arms or whatever. It's literally a pinprick. It's
supernatural.
It's diabetes, you know, like you check your sugar. It's the same amount of blood that we're using here.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the only time I've used it. And then I've used menstrual blood. I do not often maybe this is definitely an overshare, but I'm not like a period getter anymore because I'm on a lot of birth controls that I've changed up here and there. I've only ever found one pill that I still get my period with. And I actually stuck with that one as long as I could afford it because it felt better to have that connection to the earth. Yeah. I really missed that when I wasn't menstruating. And I'm young, like I should be menstruating. It's just a mark of our society that we only have medicinal help with things that cause us to essentially lose our biological functions, which is really frustrating. And there's like no research on birth control, really. Like they don't even know how long the pills last before they expire. They've never done a study on that, fun fact. But anyway, that's a digression. so yes, when I'm fortunate enough to get my period, because it is a fortunate thing, it's something that ties us to the earth. It is not a coincidence that the moon cycle is 27.3 days and that a woman's cycle is 27.3 days.
Right.
So I do like to use menstrual blood. And there's a technique I use. Now, this is all TMI, right? Like, if you don't like blood, just skip ahead. Like, press that, like, 15 seconds ahead thing. Because we're going to talk about blood for probably 5-10 more minutes. I mean, you clicked on the episode called Blood and Bone. Like, so you hopefully knew, but...
This is the bloody episode.
Yeah. So this is like, honestly, I did not know I was going to share as openly as I am now. So here we are.
You're being called to.
I am. I am. I'm like, as you were talking, I was like checking in with my spirit team about this. Because this is not like, you know, these aren't secret things in like capital S, you know, don't share the initiated mysteries. These are just things that we don't share because they're weird, awkward, uncomfortable, or otherwise icky for people to hear. So at this point, you have consented to be here. We are sharing blood magic with you. So there's this book that I don't particularly recommend, but I have talked about it on here before because she has these nuggets of wisdom. So if you're like an advanced practitioner and you like reading older texts to see what wisdom lies within, it's a good one, but you do have to peel away layers. Don't take it at face value. Ariadne's Thread by Shekinah Mountain Water. Shekinah is no longer with us. She died like 20 years ago, unfortunately. So I really wonder how she would have evolved because she seemed like a learner. I think she would have. So some of the things in that book are just, you know, they're just a product of their times. It came out in like 1993, I believe. So we're talking over 30 years ago. But she describes something that I do any chance I can whenever I have a heavy enough flow. And it sounds crazy, but you're going to make art with your menstrual blood. So it's very simple. It's almost like a Rorschach test image that you're going to create. You get like a small piece of paper, like a, I don't know, like maybe like an 8x4 or something. It doesn't have to be a big piece, or printer paper size would be fine. It doesn't matter. And you just position it beneath you while you are underwearless, and you make art with that imprint of your vulva on the paper, and the blood makes that imprint. And what I'll do, that's it. Yeah. And you meditate. I set the tone first. You know, I have my incense burning. I do this as part of my wider ritual. So I call in the quarters. I invoke my deities. I sit down. I do this art. And then afterwards, and I meditate as long as I can because you want as much flow as you can so that you have as much imprint as you can. So maybe do this on like tile or a towel or something if you have fancy carpets beneath you. And
the bathroom's a good place.
Yeah, that could work actually. I did it in front of my altar, but I do have tile floors, so I didn't have to think about it as much.
Oh, there you go. That's good.
And then I scryed in the image. And that was very moving. I found the incredible wisdom in that. And then I framed it and I have it above my altar. So if you follow me on Instagram, you won't see it above my altar. I remove it when I film, but that is where I hang it. And and it's only for me otherwise. Like my altar is
just you.
Nobody really sees me at it or anything. It's just for me and my deities. And I still get wisdom in it. You know, you can turn it, look at it from different angles, look at it under different light. You can light a candle and place it in front of it and see how the light makes the image dance. It's a really powerful activity and no injury is caused. You know, it's
no,
it's very empowering to be naked with your body in front of your altar, in front of your gods, talk about vulnerable with your deities, and to see what comes of it. To see the creativity that comes out of that.
And I wonder if that's part of the ick that is associated with this kind of magic, because you have to exhibit a level of vulnerability.
Yeah.
You have to make yourself, you know, either if you are, you know, a pinprick to the finger or something like that, you're essentially injuring yourself. I mean, it's not dire. I hope not. I mean, if you're prone to infection, it might be. But in essence, you're not doing something that's going to necessarily harm you, but it's still a vulnerable state to put yourself in, to stand in front of your altar naked while you're menstruating, especially if you're heavy, you have a heavy flow. Like it's something that you have to clean up or you have to be aware of. You can't just, you probably wouldn't dance around because, you know, whatever, unless you really want to make a mess. I don't know.
But, I don't know. Actually, with that though, like there are ritual dances that are still practiced in Eastern Europe,
yes,
irreligiously, that are about moving the flow down your body, mm-hmm. about releasing your flow, and actually the rivulets that travel down your legs are some people scry in those as well. They look for messages. So. Actually, yeah, you could be dancing in front of your altar naked. It's mm-hmm. again, maybe tile floors or maybe take up the white carpet, but that's at the end of the day, like that's, I think what we're missing so much of is just the wildness.
Yeah.
Yeah. The primal force of magic. Like, how often do you even get to scream? Really? Right. When's the last time you were able to scream? Because you're like, oh, the neighbors will hear me. Oh, my husband will be like, what's going on?
What's going on? Are you okay? You know?
Yeah.
Are you dying?
Yeah. When do you actually get to howl at the moon? Not often enough.
Right. Not at all.
But see where you can. You know, maybe you can't howl, but you can sing or you can intone, right? Yes. Singing sounds formal, but, you know, humming, oohing and aahing, feeling the vibrations of different notes through your body, shaking it around, drawing down the moon physically with your arms. And imagine you're doing that naked. You got blood flowing down your legs. Trust me, your ancestors did that. That is such a powerful connection to them.
In connection to all that, to that somatic practice, the somatic physical expression, think about feeling your menstrual cramps. Like I know for some women, they're just unbearable. But for some, like we can feel our menstrual cramps without having to double over in pain. So I think there's an element there of allowing us to feel the earthiness inside of us, allowing ourselves to feel how our body functions, feeling the cramping, feeling how our body eliminates the blood and the tissue and gets it, you know, moves through that hormonal cycle. And I think in our culture, it's so demonized to feel pain, to feel connected to our blood. Ooh. You know, we always talk about our ancestry, our bloodline, blah, blah, blah. But we don't talk about our connection to our own blood.
Yeah.
And how it moves through us. And as women, I know we're talking a lot about menstrual stuff, so sorry, guys. But I think it's such a precious thing that we don't hold precious anymore.
Yeah.
That sensation, that flow, the allowing ourselves to be conscious of it and to somatically step into that place of my body is doing what it's supposed to do and this is sacred.
Yeah. And along those lines, so people who do not menstruate, you can now tune back in. We all have bodily fluids. And we don't often talk about them in the wide mainstream. You won't see it much on social media because your account will actually get flagged if you do talk about it. So that is limiting because I understand, of course, why that's the case. And, you know, we have bigger battles to pick, so it's fine. But it should be talked about. And if you join a tradition or you're in a private community space, we do talk about it there. Like I talk about this stuff on my Patreon community a bit. Not explicitly in large terms. You know, it's sex magic is its own world. But when we're talking about magical living in nature, my community's basis, we have to talk about bodily fluids. They're part of nature. So we have blood, right? But we've got sweat. We've got semen, or, you know, women. We also have discharge. Mm-hmm. So you can connect with that any time of your cycle. And we also have urine, and we have spit, good old fashioned spit. Spit's a big one, especially in protective magic. Like if you've ever seen a witch bottle's recipe, if they left out the spit, it's because they were a bit timid, but it's always in there. Like in traditional witch bottle recipes, that's a big protective ingredient.
That and urine.
And urine, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And spit's also, like, if you are consecrating something, that's the probably the best personal ingredient to add to any wash that you're going to use. Like if you use a sacred oil or something, if it's going to be a magical tool, like an athame, a wand, something long-term, a cauldron, that's a great ingredient to add, you know, literal spit shine.
Well, and that just speaks back to our own sacredness and our own authority. With
that
spirit.
Power is within these liquids of self. And liquid is, that's life. We are over 70% water. All these things are water with extra steps.
Yep. Just got some extra stuff in it.
Have you noticed your intuition and connection to your magic is increased in certain places? Or on the opposite side, that you can't seem to connect the same way at other places? What if I told you that there is a map of your life that you can use to connect with and develop your spiritual path? In a collaboration with Friend of the Magic Kitchen and host of Mystic and Holistic podcast, Allie Knoll, I am offering an online workshop this December on deity work and locational astrology. In this workshop, we'll combine my knowledge of relationships with gods and goddesses and Allie's expertise as a professional astrologer and astrocartographer to explore how where you live and spend the most time affects not only who you've become, but also can be used to deepen your relationships with deity and spirit. Sign up at the link in the show notes or on seekingnumina.com/workshops. Early bird tickets are available through November 19th. We hope to see you there.
The other part of the dark side is often seen as, we could collectively call this bone magic. And there's layers to bones, right? Because we can work with bones from other creatures, beings, people, or we can work with our own kind of inner connection, thinking of the way that our bones are. This is extra. I don't think this is something everybody thinks about. But I think about how our bones, I learned this fact and I haven't been able to disseminate it from my magical practice. I learned it in a very normal context. I was reading a true crime novel and they were talking about it as a forensic tool. But this is very spiritual. Our bones, our actual bones, take in the elements of the land and the atmosphere of when and where we grew up, and store that for permanent ability, like to be found. If you had it mapped. Now, the problem, of course, is that we didn't map the atmosphere in like 500 AD or whatever. So can't say, oh yeah, this guy lived in Northumbria or something. But if we had it mapped, you could do that with any given bone from any given time period. It would have that info. So since they've started this mapping, which they actually have started it in like the 80s or 90s. And if any listeners are forensic analysts who know about this, please write in and tell us anything or everything about it, because it's fascinating to me.
So cool.
It's so spiritual. Like we talk about that. We're like, oh, this place, I lived there for a while and it just really got into my bones. It literally did.
Yeah.
It actually literally did. It's incredible.
Well, and the other thing about bones is that literally when you're being formed in the womb, your mother's bones are your bones. She literally gave up part of her bones to become your bones. So your bones are your mother's bones. And so that mother line is incredibly strong in our bones. Not just our blood, not just our tissue, not just our DNA, but your bones.
Wow.
And it's so amazing, like thinking of how we come to existence and how the female body creates life and how that connects us to that mother line. I'm floored by it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's like, if you're like squeamish about body parts and stuff, you don't have to literally handle bones. You can just think of it in terms of, okay, what is going on inside my bones? How can I connect to that? And visualization, okay, it's everywhere, right? But it is an incredible mm-hmm. tool. And if you can visualize that, you know, just, but it's, that's just so important to do is go within. And I often say that too, like when I think of what I am and who I am, I don't really like think of my external face and skin and eyes and, or even my voice. Like that's not me. They're manifestations of the me inside. And in a way, our bones are the only physical evidence or manifestation of our higher selves, you know, the selves that chose this ancestry when they came to this life, the selves that chose this location when they came to this life. Our bones are the record of that. And that's worth connecting to and remembering.
Yeah. And then using bones in magic. Now, I don't recommend grave robbing and going and find people's bones. We won't go there. But think about other ways you can use bones in magic. One option I have given on the podcast, not the podcast, the blog, and in, I think I put it in my book too. I can't remember now. It's been so many years since I've written it, and I need to remember.
Which book? Because you have more than one, my friend.
I do. The Magic in the Kitchen book. I talk about bones. But so I specifically gave an option of using a turkey bone to infuse your food with gratitude and infuse it with prosperity magic. So basically, you know, you have your Thanksgiving dinner. You have a turkey leg left over. Save that bone and use it to stir your soups. Use it to stir your vegetables. Use it as a utensil. And its sole purpose is to bring in essences of gratitude and prosperity and gratefulness and thankfulness. So that's one way we can use bones, because we already have it there if we're not vegetarian, obviously. But if you use any kind of animal, get the carcass, like the whole thing. Don't just get the boneless, skinless stuff. Get the whole thing and use the bones.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's actually, you know, that's also something our ancestors did and something we really should get back to is using the whole animal. The whole thing. My grandmother does that. She literally didn't believe me when I told her, because I buy her groceries for her quite a bit. So she was like, I'm sorry, what? Like when I told her you can just buy chicken breasts. Like she's like, what do you mean? Where's the bones? She literally couldn't process it explaining it. And it's because not only would she be like, why? That's weird. Why? Animals have bones. Yeah. But it's also because she uses those bones for other things. She makes stock. Right. She makes broth.
Yes.
She needs them, like in her mind. She's like, they're cheating me. Where's my bones?
Because that's useful. And I think we've forgotten how useful they are. And in kitchen magic, bones are so essential. Think of the value of bone broth, okay? Everybody loves bone broth now, right? Not only because it's got some nourishment in it, but especially as you get older, you lose collagen. So it's a great way to replace collagen in our body. But think of it in a magical, like take it a step further besides, you know, just health and wellness and beauty. Take it a step further and think of what magical aspects that bone broth could infuse your life with. And that's the essence of kitchen magic right there. So we're not just discarding the things that we perceive unusable because we've stepped into a culture that no longer uses them, but we're stepping back into our roots of, okay, this animal served a purpose. So let me make sure this animal's purpose is fulfilled, and let me use it in every possible way.
Yeah, exactly. When we talk also about bone magic, there are a lot of cultural uses of bones that, depending on your practice and the background of your practice, your heritage, your ancestry, whatever you would like to connect to, might be worth looking into. So in ancient Greece, necromancy was very much tied to bone magic. And within that, ancient Greece is, you know, they were a colonizing society. So they spread what they were doing very far, all the way out to Celtic communities. And before that, in the, you know, prehistoric times, we also know that Celts, ancient Greeks, Egyptians, Central Europeans, you know, the Gauls that were Celtic people that lived throughout France. And, you know, some of these people, they moved themselves all the way up into Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. These common ancestors that many of us share all had a similar understanding of bones at the heart of necromancy and ancestor work, which necromancy and ancestor work are very much tied together, because we think of necromancy as almost like a channeling experience now. We don't ever really think of it as like, this guy just died. Let me go wake him up. Like, but that's what it was for the ancients in like any number of cultures. Yeah. And in ancient Greece, which I can speak to a little bit more personally and in detail, they would go to battlefields. They would, and they would get the details of what actually happened from the dead. That was one of the main uses of it. And they would also do this for someone who died in a mysterious way to try and get the facts. The criminal investigation looked very different in ancient Greece. And the people who did this, there's a famous example of a witch who did this. She was a woman, which most professional sorcerers were men in the ancient world. So this is significant. And she probably wasn't real. But the fact that she was written about and famous for this, or infamous, really, is interesting, because it makes us think maybe there were women who were doing this. We don't know. We don't have every account of every person. But anyway, Erichtho is her name. And she was actually written by the Romans, but we have an understanding that she was rewritten, that she was almost like adapted from an ancient Greek source.
Gotcha.
But she was a necromancer who really specialized in the battlefield magic. And not only would she go out, she would go out for selfish reasons. She'd go out there to collect pieces that she could use for other things later, which is really interesting. So this tradition continues throughout history. A lot of people did grave rob for bone pieces for magic, because, and even today, people talk about using grave dirt. That's probably the closest thing you'll see modern magic accepting, you know, in the mainstream, is that you can go to a graveyard and collect some dirt. Because really, like, we also would never say, like, collect a lot. Like, for the most part, people would collect, like, little amounts. I've never done this because I really am very superstitious. But some people do. Like, but I have taken, like, if I was walking in, like, when I lived in Baltimore, I've shared about this a lot. But my backyard was a cemetery. So I would collect. If I was gifted a feather in my long walks there, I would take that feather, you know. But I wouldn't think of it as necromancy. It was more just I connected to the land and I was gifted this. So anyway. All this to say, necromancy has really evolved, but it does have its roots in bone magic. So if this is a thread you want to follow for your practice, I think you should. I think you should check it out and see what comes to you.
Check it out.
And the other last way I would say bone magic is accessible for a modern practitioner is in found bones. So I wanted a bone to work with. I never worked with bones when I was going, when I was first joined my covenant, I was going through my initiation. We were talking about, you know, different ingredients and bone magic came up and I was like, you know what? Okay. I want to work with like a wild animal bone. So I just kind of put that out to the universe. And within that week, I was doing some gardening, which I do not have a garden. I was helping my mother garden and I found a bone. I found like a little rabbit or groundhog leg bone. It was amazing. I felt like so seen because I put that out to my deities, my spirit team, and they delivered, you know, but it was cleaned. It was perfect. It was ready. It was there for me and it wasn't going to hurt anything to remove it from my mom's garden. So that's a way to do it. Another way you can do it is, you know, hiking and out in the woods. There's, there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, and under those layers and layers of leaves. So put that out there, petition the land spirits and see what they can gift
see
you
what
with.
They do for you. Absolutely.
Are you enjoying the show? If you are, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you and to keep doing the Magic Kitchen podcast. Thank you. So when you're looking at how to incorporate the quote unquote darker side of magic into your craft this Samhain, hopefully this gave you some ideas and got your wheels turning in a different direction. And we just want to end by reminding you that this is something that comes down to ethics in a really big way. And you have to really decide where your lines are. And we would never encourage you to do anything dangerous towards yourself or others. And particularly, we would never encourage you to do anything that you're not comfortable with. Your path is your own. Our suggestions are just that. And anything that comes up for you that is uncomfortable, or, you know, it's not a deity asking you to do that. It's always something. Anything you do in the craft should be empowering. It should be uplifting. Mm-hmm. It should be encouraging. It should make you feel better. And that's the core of any of these practices as well, is how can they improve your path, your life, and what you're doing.
Absolutely. And and remaining ethical in that is a key aspect. So just make sure that you're being careful and being safe.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a heavy topic, I think. And if you have questions, I know you have questions out there, please feel free to write in and send us an email with your questions, and we'll either try to address that quickly in another episode, or we might even do a whole other episode based on what your question is. So feel free to contact us.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. So if this is of interest, if you were like, finally, they did this episode, let us know if you liked it, if you had more questions, where you wanted to continue. And we are always continuing these conversations in our free community space, on the Broom Closet, on the Rebel Mystic, and in our my magical living community on Patreon. And Leandra has the Rebel Mystic community on Circle. Yep. These are places that you can connect with us one-on-one, and places where you can connect with the rest of the community in those groups. And they're growing every day. So if you're feeling lost or overwhelmed on your path, consider learning some structure with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's what we're here for, is to provide that structure, to provide that support, and to provide that insight that, you know, everybody needs it. We all need it. We all need our community. And I think now more than ever, it's incredibly important.
Yeah. And have a wonderful Samhain.
Yeah, happy Samhain.
Merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.